the Illuminati. The other subordinates are all the unscrupulous politicians and secret organizations, who appear to be acting for their own greedy ends, but, in reality, they are being used, through manipulation, by an overseer organization called the Illuminati. The Illuminati have always been aiming for maximum psychic pollution through corruption and strife, and for chaos and mayhem, the necessary preconditions to establish a socialist world government, where everything and everybody would be owned and controlled by a dictatorial world state, run by the billionaire money barons and international bankers for the Illuminati. The opposition wants to utilize Earth's badly perverted psychic emanations through powerful amplification to disrupt and eventually conquer other systems in the cosmos, as well. Economic depressions, revolutions and wars are being engineered to break down social order by the Illuminati-manipulated invisible government. According to R.A. Wilson and others, this invisible government is staffed by members of the CFR Council of Foreign Relations, Federal Reserve Board, Trilateral Commission, and the International Bilderberger Group. The May 1976, Nogales, Arizona Conference of an Associated Group for World Government was headed by David Rockefeller, then presidential advisor Brzezinski, and assorted Soviet big shots. The question is, are the Rockefellers communist agents, or are the communists actually Rockefeller employees? Incidentally, while chairman of CFR, Rockefeller took a vacation in Moscow in October of 1971, and, a few days later, Soviet Premier Khrushchev was recalled from his holiday to learn that we had been fired. Who can fire an absolute dictator? Or, did Rockefeller just fire a troublesome employee? See the book, None Dare It Call Conspiracy by Gary Allen. To subvert law and morals and to control behavior, media manipulation, political extremism, Satanism, pornography, and even rock music is being widely used. Richard S. Shaver, in the May 1974 SF issue of The Alien Critic, warned of subversion by vibrations of quite paralyzing potency disguised as the latest rock sound. Additionally, from outer space, strong negative vibrations and suggestions causing fear, depression and violence are being transmitted by the evil forces from the dark side of the moon and beamed toward Earth with selective amplification by relay station spaceships. In Satan's Assassins 1971, Brad Steiger explored the idea that behavior control might have played a part in the disruptive riots and political assassinations of the 1960s. Incidentally, numerous MIBs were spotted in Dealey Plaza at the time of JFK's fatal visit to Dallas. Alleged triangle UFO from Imperial Alliance. The Men in Black. Men in Black are the dark force specialists of harassment, intimidation, terror and murder. They may be either paid and or coerced human agents, human government employed dupes or expendable, brainwashed, bionically manipulated human zombies. Sometimes, they are downright robots of alien origin, frequently doppelgangers, cloned and short-lived duplicates of existing humans and even poltergeist conjurings or holographic projections, whatever a specific job requires. They are run by resident masters, and coordinated from various bases, usual Earth base in Antarctica's Mount Erebus region, solar bases on the moon's dark side, on asteroids, and on Pluto, with their activities directed by the opposition's space fleet intelligence, and ruled from behind the scenes by the Dark Lords who dwell in a hellish dimension of their own. On occasion, a Dark Lord might choose to work in physical embodiment like the one-time Darth Vader, who actually did exist. The Imperial UFOnauts of the Dark Forces, on Earth assignments, use mostly triangular, bat-shaped scout and fighter ships. These are dull black in daylight, possess a fire engine red glow at night, and are aptly named Demoncraft. They are notorious for causing wanton destruction, the harm and abduction of humans and the mutilation of animals. The Dark Forces also cause many large-scale tragedies and disasters, such as the 1979 Jonestown Massacre, and the 1980 Mississauga Explosion. Even though they didn't overtly control such events, they helped trigger them by negative feedback and by other manipulative means. some of their expendable hatchet men and field operators are eliminated, occasionally, but new ones just spring up again later on, due to Earth's usually negative psychic climate. Therefore, to fight off evil is an ever-ongoing process like pest control in any large city. The New Age movement. Yet, it's not all that bad, for there are mighty countermeasures at work from the forces of light. For example, the current leaderless but powerful network that is working to bring about a radically positive change in the land. This network, called Aquarian Conspiracy in her book with the same title, by sociologist Marilyn Ferguson, is without a political doctrine, and without a manifesto. Broader than reform and deeper than religion, this benign conspiracy for a human agenda has triggered the most rapid cultural realignment in history. The great shift overtaking us is not a new political, religious or philosophical system. It is a new mind, the ascendance of a startling worldview. The Aquarian conspirators span all levels of income and education, from the humblest to the highest. Whatever their station or sophistication, the conspirators are linked and made kindred by their common discoveries and attitudes. This has all evolved from a sequence of historical events that could hardly lead elsewhere. The crisis of our time is being met by a new perspective of people with transformation, innovation and devolution. How did the new perspective come about? From where did the inspiration come to all those thinkers, writers and activists whose ideas influenced people? It all came from the forces of light. Through the Space Brothers, the continuing transmissions from Sirius Center, and the untiring workers of the Great White Brotherhood and Associates. The crisis is being met, and the hope for a peaceful jump into the new age is getting stronger. The much prophesied final catastrophe still may be averted, or at least minimized. The alternative, global extinction and eternal darkness, is just too horrendous to even contemplate. The question is, will our present turmoil lead to a worldwide breakdown of society, or to a breakthrough to the next stage in human evolution? Mission Earth. Order from the Guardians. Around 5000 BC, after this Galaxy 20 mission's completion, you three will be jointly yet separately assigned to look after a faraway planet called Earth. You will live long stretches on Earth and walk amongst the population for the next 7000 years or so, teaching, guiding and eventually ushering this great would-be jewel of a world into the new age of cosmic fraternity. The planet is destined for a role of great cosmic significance, so it will have to be looked after by this best qualified missionary and facilitator team. Quentin's job: development assistance for the ancient civilizations in the Americas, about 7,000 years ago, as I was transported down from a spaceship to this locality, my small auto shuttle malfunctioned and landed me a few miles off the target. It set down right in the midst of some religious Indian festivity, causing the agitated natives falling on their faces. As I scrambled free of the immediately departing craft, I soon learned that the natives took me for their legendary plumed serpent sky god of the air, Quetzalcoatl. No wonder that they named this site Teotihuacan, the city of the gods, or the place of gods. Since my task was about teaching them some culture and civilization, I went along with their unshakable belief in me as their incarnate deity, hoping to make them more receptive to novel ideas. And the stratagem worked like a charm. But they were slow learners. So I just kept popping up throughout the centuries in various places. One time, coming from an Easter Island conference to the coast of Chile, I even walked through Peru, Ecuador, the Amazon jungles, Central America, North America, right up to the Athabascan region. This particular journey became the subject of many tribal legends, some of it written up in L. Taylor Hansen's book He Walked the Americas. My mission was to bring peace and prosperity through civilization. I introduced agriculture, the art of writing, devised a calendar for the Mesoamericans based on a 52-year cycle, with a Pleiades orientation as a hint for Earthman's long-forgotten origins, kept attempting the permanent foundation of justice and humanism in Mesoamerica, heavily opposed by the powerful priesthood's desire to perpetuate the humans' sacrificing practices. One time I even became their priest ruler for 30 years in the Toltec city of Tula. After then, The scheming priests managed to oust me by clever trickery, plus ran me out of town with intent to kill. According to their version, out of shame I set fire to myself and went up in flames with a threat of returning in the flesh again someday. Actually, I did speak to the crowd about such return, just before getting spectacularly beamed aboard a rescuing Federation spaceship near Vera Cruz, thus ending my millenniums-long public role in those parts. When centuries later Hernan Cortes landed in the same area, no wonder the natives believed he was Quetzalcoatl coming back. We of the Federation had a general idea what troubles and tribulations could issue from that historical landing event, yet we hoped Cortes and his Spanish soldiers would succeed in overthrowing the bloody-handed Aztec priesthood, which priesthood, amongst other atrocities, in just 1 week's time butchered young men by tens of thousands through cutting their hearts out for sacrificial offering to commemorate the Tenochtitlan temples on the site of present-day's Mexico City, so the ousting could bring peace and humane conditions in the long run. After the overthrowing, it still took many revolutions and several centuries to achieve results, but it was worth the struggle. And even though my millenniums-long public role had ended, on behalf of the Federation I still have been active from behind the scenes. Don Miguel's job, development assistance for the ancient civilizations in Asia and Alaska. Also from the stars, the old Indian came down to help progress on our Earth through Space Federation assignment just about the same time as Quentin and Argus, approximately 7,000 years ago, that is. He was the man who walked Asia and Alaska. His original beat was mainly Siberia, known there as the Great Shaman with ready-made old looks for a better credibility. But his widening rounds took him even to Mongolia and over to Kamchatka, then southwest through a string of islands the Urals and today's Japan and back to the mainland again. About 3000 BC he helped Fu Cai, the first ruler of China, to establish a civilized order. He was around there again in the late 13th century AD time, as a very close advisor to the great Kublai Khan, even met the legendary Marco Polo himself. Mid-17th century AD he had a hand in establishing the Manchu dynasty in Manchuria. In between times he did numerous other things as a man of countless guises and talents. His present identity with the Don Miguel name was adopted in the late 18th century AD only. He led thousands of families across the Bering Strait to Alaska, and down to more hospitable climates in North America. He also had long stays with the Eskimos. Eventually, he settled with the Navajo and Pueblo Indians. But prior to it he spent long stretches in Mesoamerica, in which area his influence had been felt in the past two millenniums along with that of Quetzalcoatl. Later, Don Miguel disclosed some other relevant information. He said he was well over 30,000 years old in his present embodiment. He and his long-lived fellow operatives on these special planetary assignments had regular access to facilities, communications, R&R. These options were provided via shuttling to a Federation-stationed space lab arc in the solar system. But after a while planetside, the operatives are becoming more and more self-sufficient. Full immersion in the environment and total devotion to the mission became quite natural with them over the millennia. And this was beneficial all around, for both the planet's cultural and the operative's individual growth. Argus job. Development assistance for the ancient civilizations in Europe and the Middle East. Argus was born in his present embodiment approximately 7,000 years ago, aboard a spaceship in Earth orbit Star Cruiser class of planet tank registry from a far away Federation system, offspring of the ship commander and an Earth woman from the East Mediterranean. He grew up on Earth, but after age 21 he went to Planet Hank to obtain his higher education. Upon graduation from the Space Academy, he joined the Psychian Division of the Federation Space Fleet. Then, after long centuries of diverse duty tours, Argus was stationed to Earth and assigned to a tough mission. He was to battle and neutralize a great variety of giant monsters imported by the Dark Forces, that endangered the population of early civilization and the personnel of Federation bases in the Aegean region. Besides the fulfilling of his assignment, in the next millennia Argus sired numerous offsprings from Troy to Sparta, amongst them the royal house of Argos, plus several lines of psychic seers. He was also known as the mythical Man of a Thousand Eyes, no surprise in the light of his efficiency as a security and intelligence officer. Power centers, chakras. We went back to the lecturing. The next stills on the screen showed groups of people in different Earth environments, along with their psychic emanations. It seemed that specific types of activities, for example studying, hockey playing, merchandise selling, religious worshipping, generated their own distinctively characteristic emanations. Besides the group, the same applied to any given individual within the group, yet there were some basic emanations apart from the given activity with each person. Argus flashed on several stills in rapid succession. They were sill-out pictures of persons, along with the colors of their psychic emanations that formed an aura around them. The inner part of the aura's colors characterized the person's basic vibrations, like health factors, moral values and orientations, attitudes and motivation. The outer part of the aura was rather showing surface emotions, conditions and preoccupations. Running an animated sequence, Argus narrated an average person's going through the main portions of his day, and the corresponding changes that took place in the aura. Then a family of five were shown with their individual aura changes, as they went to church, to lunch and to a beach. It was fascinating to see how vastly they all differed from each other, and how differently they each reacted and related in the common situations. It all boiled down to the very inner characteristics of the individual. One could almost predict how they would relate in certain situations. In one glance at the aura, it was easy to tell about a person's moral stature, inner balance, strength of character, value, orientation, state of accomplishment. It was easy to tell, that is, for someone like Argus, or the central intelligence of a sorcerer. Although I could comprehend the generalities of the aura colors and patterns, but to know about that in full depth was a science in itself. The sorcerer could identify every individual from a great distance, even in a crowd. But to instantly assess someone's subtler frame of mind or someone's totality out of the multitudes, was decidedly a job for specialists. Now I knew why the sorcerer could pick me out and read me from such a great distance. Argus said some Earth humans were capable of aura seeing partially, some others develop it to a greater degree. With people of this dimension, such a thing was natural ability. They could see auras if they wished to make the effort to tune in, and they could also make an educated guess about its generalities. Argus then flashed on a still that displayed an average Earth human and an average human of this dimension, side by side. The latter's aura pattern was generally healthier, stronger, more pronounced where mental and psychic attributes were concerned. On this illustration, Argus pointed out the seven power centers of the body. He told about how these centers gave out strong vibrations of their own if they were sufficiently functioning. In the Earth human, these power centers were functioning either very faintly or not at all. I learned that the intensity of power in these centers placed one on a lower or higher level of overall being. Obviously, that's what my boosters were for. They helped to step up my vibrational rate by boosting the appropriate centers, so that my body and mind could function in this dimension for a while. Argus said this state could not be made permanent though, even with body chemistry and molecular structure altered as a result of my Tibetan visit. Now that we have analyzed and diagnosed people, I asked Argus, how could an individual change for the better? Three ways, he said. First, by starting to live sensibly, positively. Second, by raising the level of conscious awareness. Third, by altering the vibratory rate. No matter which end one starts, changes are cumulatively affecting the other two as well. After all, these three aspects are just different ends of the same fabric. What do all these vibrations have to do with the body and life functions of a human being? I asked. Argus explained that everything vibrates at a certain specific frequency of its own. This includes human beings too. For a human being is much more than mere biochemical machine produced by the genes through DNA molecules. Beyond coded genes and biochemistry, our form and functioning depends really on intangible organizing factors that manifest through energy patterns called vibrational fields. He continued, within one's overall vibrational field, a so-called life field or etheric field of a human being is the factor that governs the atoms, molecules, cells and organs. Thus, changing the vibrational rate of the subfields alters molecular structure and chemistry. This in turn changes the whole human being. You saw how diversified the changes are. The results can be in the existence of different dimensions, realization of some human potential, ESP powers. Within narrow limits, your Earth people can see already the vibrational principle at work. For it's common knowledge to them that heat, sound, light, telecommunications, nuclear radiation, are differing only in frequency rate. As I was saying, your chemistry and nature of functioning is being governed by an overall etheric field. In turn, this field is determined by yet a far more intangible organizing factor, quite beyond human reach, called the causal field. This field is the one that actually produces the etheric field, and also the coexistent mental field. These two in turn produce the body and the mind, respectively. On our part, instead of mere physical or psychological treatment, medically, we rather cure at the root causes, through fields balancing. Consequently, we hardly have any serious health problems, also our lifespan becomes a great deal longer. We can also make various other alterations in the etheric and mental fields, through technological or psychic means. No vast transformation through such means can be permanent, though. The causal field pattern that sustains your present status quo won't permit that, except by a natural process by either growth or development. This natural process is actually a phase-by-phase unfoldment of one's causal pattern to its fullest potential, which is common to all living things. Thus unfolds even the overall cosmic design in a gradual way, yet cycle by distinct cycle. Psychic pollution. Next day we didn't go out at all. Sometime after a late breakfast, Argus took me up to his study. The place was comfortably furnished, featuring even a coffee maker, and other Earth-like amenities. There was a huge, blank screen at one wall. Argus used that for illustrating his lecture-style explanation of many facts, which he got launched into now. He kept flashing stills and moving pictures upon the screen, without any projectors in sight, without pushing buttons, seemingly just by willing alone. When I asked where all the vast flow of information was coming from, he said it was no special trick and almost any educated psychic person could do it. The person either used his own memory banks, or got just linked up with a library computer. He started out with reminding me how the astrodome we visited the night before was displaying the momentary configuration of many cosmic forces and factors that influenced life in general. He flashed a still on the screen, which resembled a sampling of the astrodome display's densely packed color patterns. He said, different colors represented different cosmic forces and factors. For instance, the relative position of planetary bodies within a given solar system had a significant bearing on world events in respective sectors. He said if Earth people didn't believe this, they may be in for a nasty shock at the time of planetary lineup in the first half of the 1980s, generally referred to as the Jupiter effect. I studied the screen display. Points of any one given color added up to force line patterns or clouds of varying densities. I was amazed at the dozens of different major cosmic forces, planetary magnetic fields, psychic emanations, which contributed to making up an intangible climate that influenced the natural and the man-made events. Argus said, air and water pollution were well-known factors on Earth, but psychic pollution was hardly ever considered seriously. Yet, psychic climate was terribly important for shaping life in every aspect, from individual character and motivation to global-scale ideologies and their consequences. He pointed to a heavily dense cloud of murky coloration on the screen, saying that this represented psychic fallout drifting in from neighboring systems like my dimension, through the window areas. This fallout was poison to many important functioning in this other system, occasionally causing downright disruptions at more heavily affected places. On the large-scale interdimensional map stills Argus flashed on, it showed Earth was a major offender in generating this psychic fallout. for no matter how vast the distances seemed, spaces were not uniformly linear, due to many warps, cross currents, and other anomalies. In case of parallel universes, there were many overlaps and interpenetrations between the dimensions. Therefore, two locations separated by incredible distances could happen to be almost side by side for psychic emanations. Then, Argus went on with explaining how all this psychic fallout got produced and by what. On the following and better detailed Earth stills, I literally saw heavy clouds of psychic pollution over areas like the Middle East, South Africa, many spots over India, the Far East, several spots over parts of Europe and the Americas. These cloud and spot indicators spoke for themselves. A clear map of hate and fear, violence, social unrest. Other spots over large centers of the peace-loving rich countries were not difficult to guess at as emanations of fear, greed, envy and cutthroat competition. On one close-up map of a major North American city, I could guess at such emanations as discrimination, hypocrisy, crass materialism and the like. All these added up to the general psychic smog, that in turn could generate more of the same and worse. The stills of Earth's psychic weather report needed no explanation. I felt deeply moved. The Council of the Guardians. Since we are in a position to help your people, in our ethics there is no way to avoid helping. And last but not least, we have really no choice in the matter. A mighty power beyond us that we call the Guardians do want us to help. They are the elder brothers of all humankind, administrators of the universal law. Why all the hide-and-seek type UFO activities on planet Earth? Why not tell all in a globally publicized official contact? I asked. Because we are not justified to interfere that drastically. Argus said, not unless it's absolutely necessary. Think of the gigantic psychological impact our mass landing would cause. It'd be a downright tampering with Earth's destiny line, which only Earth humans alone should work out on their own. Yet, we keep deferring Earth catastrophes and impending major wars, by minimal and covert means, in hope of gaining time for a more peaceful transition to the new cosmic cycle. So far there is definitely hope, it still may be a reasonably peaceful dawning of the Aquarian Age. We still want your people to learn the truth of our presence eventually. Besides drawing attention to the fact that Earth humans are not alone in the cosmos, and are certainly not the most highly evolved. But for reasons already stated, it's better to infiltrate the truth slowly at first, stepping it up gradually. Incidentally, one of our distant allies, the Aetherians, are the best at these infiltrative type of propagations. They rarely ever show themselves, but they certainly do a lot of telepathic transmitting to Earth people. From the conversation with Quentin. By the way, what is this council? I pressed on for some details, while the going seemed good. It is the Council of the Guardians. It consists of the elder brothers of humankind. In the realm of all these dimensions, your world is in one of those many universes, so is this world here, and my own far away world in yet another dimension, too. Elder brothers? Like those in the stories one hears about the Space Brothers? The Ancient Ones, the Great White Lodge, or whatever. Something along those lines, but not quite. Besides, names or concepts do not matter, only the essence. So let's just call them the Guardians, for convenience's sake. I gather, they are not on this planet. Do they live in yet another dimension? No dimension with them. You can't find them in any physical dimension of the multiverse. They exist and function outside of these multiverse structures, in the uppermost regions of a totally non-physical plane. You see, they are incorporeal beings, partially even unmanifest. You mean, they are some kind of ghosts? No, for they never died. They became immortal way back in the past, while still in the human flesh. Since they no longer need bodies, their consciousnesses dwell in what you could call some soul essence, inaccessible to physical realms. There, they oversee the proper functioning and evolving of our physical worlds, and make minor course changes if necessary, provided the changes are in accord with the overall cosmic scheme. Well, how do they know if in accord? Partly, they know it through insight that comes from the great unmanifest realm. And partly, They got the knowledge through occasional consultation with the ascended masters, when conditions are right. What do you mean by unmanifest?